Hi, welcome to the BOM Blocks podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis, and today I'm joined again by my guest, Eric Morland, the first returning guest on the podcast. So great to have Eric back again. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And thank you for having me back in. Quite an honor to be the first returning guest, I must say.
Yeah, it's interesting. We spoke in January, I think. We're currently recording this on the 1st of August, so it's been 7 or 8 months, and I'm just not sure where the time has gone in between now and then. So that's a little bit scary, but interesting to catch up a bit about what's happened in that time.
Yeah.
People who haven't listened to the first episode with you, which was, I think it was episode 8. Do you want to give another brief introduction about yourself and what you do?
Oh, I had a note where I should read it from, and then the first time. So I'm gonna do this. Well, my name is Eric. I work as a. Well, it's called my job title is actually head of Drupal in a consulting company in Norway called Frontcom. I'm also the founder and person developing most stuff on the PHP and Composer update service violinist.io, which is what we talked about last time, and what we will also talk a bit about today, I think.
Yeah, it's great.
I've been working with Drupal and PHP. Well, I guess Drupal specifically for something like 13 years, and yeah, done some stuff on Drupal.org and other PHP libraries as well, I guess.
We're just talking about some other things, but some of the new things in Drupal, like Twig and front-end development and everything beforehand. So we have a little bit of a reminisce before we started recording.
Yeah.
You're previously on episode
I
eight, which was in January. And I'll put the link to that in the notes as well, so people can find it if you want. Go ahead, what are you going to say?
was just going to mention that I don't really miss the PHP template engine that we had around in Drupal 6 and 7.
Yeah, we were just saying a moment ago, Eric's got a new person starting to join the team soon, and so we started to talk about some of the new things. Not really new anymore. I think Drupal 8's been out a long time. In the newer versions of Drupal, so 8+, talking about a Twig and so the reusability of that knowledge, I suppose, between projects, specifically around Twig, we were talking about. But because I do Drupal, but also do Sculpin, which is a static site generator that uses Twig. Do some Symfony work which uses Twig. We do front-end development in a component library called Fractal, which uses technically Twig.js, so it's a JavaScript implementation of Twig, which isn't exactly the same. There are some slight differences, but yeah, being able to sort of reuse that same knowledge across multiple projects is a real sort of valuable skill, I think.
For sure, and not requiring specifically the PHP knowledge for being able to be productive with front end and templates specifically is that really has a great value.
Yeah, it's also the same on the back end as well. I remember a few years ago, I was working for an agency, and we had to go on a training course, or it was a training course. Somebody came in and was talking to us about their software, their SaaS that they used. So we got talking about the specifics of how it worked and what it was written in and everything. And it was written in JavaScript, which I quite a bit of JavaScript and TypeScript, but it's not my primary language. I suppose PHP is my primary language. But then we start talking about like event dispatches and event-driven development and that type of thing. And I was like, oh, like I don't know necessarily how your implementation of that works, but I know those terms because I've used them in Symfony or used them in Drupal 8 or Drupal 9 or whatever it was at the time. So that cross-language terminology and approach is really valuable in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Although we still have some things that I believe only exist in Drupal, like render arrays, and Well, hooks is now
Hooks are still in.
generalized in other things, but the way we use hooks in Drupal is not obvious always to everyone. I'm quite a fan of hooks myself, but yeah, I'm seeing that it's definitely not generalized knowledge.
Got to paraphrase, I'm sure I get this completely wrong, but I remember speaking with Angie Byron, aka Webchick, at a DrupalCon somewhere, probably back when I was working for the association. Or was watching her give a talk anyway. But I remember she's because she came from a Java background or some sort of more formal software development education or background, and then started doing Drupal something, early version of Drupal number here. And was like, yeah, this is a hook. And it's like, yeah, what's a hook? This isn't really a thing outside of Drupal. So yeah, Drupalisms
For
definitely
sure.
a thing. Less of them now. So yeah, it's really interesting actually in seeing Drupal, I think, as a product and a project continuing to evolve and move towards, also moved to Twig a while ago, but I was seeing about deprecating Ajax in terms of HTMX recently. Like to see it continuously evolving and developing is a really interesting thing, which a lot of people probably don't see because it's, oh, we download it and we use it for our website, and but there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and it takes a long time as well, you know, to move towards newer standards. And even though the work to sort of remove and deprecate in core can start at one point, then actually ending up having the consequences for whatever project you're working on could be some years ahead. So it's always good to know that some smart people are working on things to keep up with the rest of the world.
I think that's one of the things about the Starshot Initiative. I haven't really talked about this too much or at all on the pod before, but I think, yeah, that's part of it, isn't it? Having something that's a bit more rapidly developing, different governance model to Drupal core, which typically has been like a fairly slow process for adopting things. But I think Starshot is, at least from my what I've seen of it so far, is meant to be more of a quicker life's development life cycle to maybe adopt some of these newer things. I need to look into it more, and I need to get somebody on to discuss it with. But it definitely seems interesting. I don't know if you've looked into that at all recently.
Not beyond the reading about it, so probably on the same level as you just explained. Yeah, very exciting to see where it takes us.
Interesting. So I thought I'd reach out. So I've been using Vinylist. We talked about Vinylist in our previous episodes, say back in January. And I remember I was setting it back up again while we were on the episode last time. I was testing out and trying it again on the Drupal site and the Sculpin site and everything, because they're both PHP, so that really helps. But signed up for the email list as well. And if I recall, I think where we ended the last pod was, what's the next thing for Violinist? And I think you said Teams, if I was, am I remembering that rightly or correctly?
Yeah, that was the next big thing.
So I remember seeing an email saying Teams is now on Violinist. So I thought that was really cool. And I read a little bit about see the email and the other things that you sent. I was like, oh, that sounds cool. We should have another discussion. We should discuss what's happened with Violinist and anything else sort of between January and now. So
Yeah.
what's new? Is Teams the main thing, or what else is new?
Well, I guess the main reason I said what big thing is coming and it's Teams is because it's been going on for quite a while. It's also been one of the most frequently requested features on Violinist since almost since the beginning, because a lot of the people that are using it is, for example, an organization or an agency. Where you typically have more than one person doing maintenance and development. And that also means that logging into Violinist for either checking, the update status of a project or even adding new projects quite often is something that more than one person does. Naturally, people will then start to sort of request, could we have some team or organization support there so we can share the access? Because one of the, should I say, restrictions or limitations in the past has been that you would be required to log in with a GitHub user or a Bitbucket user or whatever source control provider you're using. And this is a problem. For example, if you sign up using your personal account and then you want your coworker to administer the project as well. So in the past, and this has been an okay solution, I would say, most organizations have this sort of a robot user or a machine user that's called something like organization underscore bot or organization underscore machine or something like that. And then they would just share access to this one and log into Violinist, and that, sort of works okay-ish.
I used to have that on Drupal.org actually as well, with people maintaining contrib modules from their projects.
Oh,
People
yeah.
would leave, go to leave the company, and then how do we have people like still maintain those modules over time? And that convention started to appear of people having sort of like organization accounts, for want of a better term, of organization name here as the username that would get shared across the thing. So yeah,
Yeah,
sounded familiar.
right. Probably an indication of some sort of a symptom, I guess. So,
Yeah, definitely.
and so on Drupal.org, you can for sure share these things now. And
Was
well,
10
at
years ago,
least
and I've changed since
projects.
then.
But yeah, so, but another use case that someone was requesting was sharing this access with their clients, actually, because if you're a big agency and maybe you're supporting an organization, let's say you're supporting, I don't know, the EU Parliament or something like that, and the EU Parliament has 25 projects that you as a consultancy company support, and they have internal developers also working on it. And so if you have this machine user, you, of course, in this consultant department company, can log in and see and add projects and whatnot, but it's natural that you don't share the login information to this user with your client, the EU Parliament, if that was the case.
Yeah,
And so
with
that's
my
another.
day job hat on, there'd definitely be people not happy if we were sharing logins. And yeah, we'd have to have some sort of single sign-on solution ideally, but sharing logins would be a big no-no with my day job hat on, definitely.
Oh yeah, for sure. So it's not the most common use case, as usually agencies will have clients with one project, and they are in most cases not a client with internal developers, or they're maintaining it 100% inside of the consultant company. So in those cases, you wouldn't share it anyway. But it's a use case that this teams and organization functionality would then also support. And so after well, what I should say is has been very careful refactoring and parallel process of implementing it. It has now gone live, and people are using it. So I think that's the most obvious area that people have been embracing it, I should say, is to be able to both have their as you say, day job hats and hobby hats on. So, for example, I could log in and see all of the projects that the company that I work in are in there. But I could also have some personal projects or nonprofit organizations that I maintain some websites for and so on. So that's probably the most frequently used multi-team use case, I would say. But people are, of course, also inviting coworkers in there and sort of making it easier to share access. The most interesting part for violinist as a service and in terms of should I say growth is the fact that when there are more people invited in, which can also add projects, this makes it easier and probably increases some sort of velocity on adding new projects. So by making it easier for our users, we sort of also makes it more likely that they will upgrade to another plan because more people are finding projects that they want to add in there. So that's a nice side effect that I have observed.
Yeah, I suppose it could also have that if more people logging in, like, is it also potentially causing more issues or more things that you also need to fix the violinist itself as well, maybe. So another knock-on effect of having more people logging in.
I guess, well, I would say mostly constructive feedback and feature requests because many organizations have been logging in. Now, it's been that one person is sort of been responsible for logging into Violinist, adding projects there, and so on. And then when there are now two or three, then they have some ideas that they sort of request, which are not bugs per se, but more like that's a really good idea. We should look into add that. So that's also a side effect for sure.
I'm just thinking how the workflow works previously to how it worked before. So I've got a GitHub repository. I then sign up for a violinist account, and then violinist is responsible for scanning essentially my composer JSON file and then creating pull requests as new changes and new updates are available. I'll probably really oversimplify that. But yeah, so I suppose there's multiple people potentially would have been in my GitHub repository to begin with. As in developers and things. So different people could have seen the end pull requests being created, but they wouldn't have access to the tool or the dashboard that was generating them to begin with. So if somebody wanted to make a change or something, that person's now left the company or doesn't work on the team anymore, that would have been the bottleneck that they wouldn't have been able, somebody else wouldn't have been able to have logged in and changed settings or things like the pull request still would have happened, but that middle area, the violinist part, is what they would have been knocked out from.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And this has happened actually a couple of times before the team support was added. Someone emailed me and said, this former employee in our organization signed up for your service over here. We don't know
Yeah.
how to change something. Can you please help us?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Somebody sat there going, why is there a violinist making pull requests against our project? I think it was
Yeah,
Larry
well.
Garfield actually who said that, but a client used to think that Travis was somebody who worked on their team, and they're like, oh no, it's an automated tool that does pipelines or something, or some automated tool. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, I guess you could add an order line on the invoice. Travis worked this many hours.
Yeah, so, yeah. Why would you make your pipeline faster in that case? Yeah, that's interesting. So, what's the benefit you said mentioned about people want to let their clients in? What's the benefit of giving clients access to Violinist?
I think the main use case for that is the client is large enough, or should I say responsible enough, or have a development in house, development team in house.
Okay.
So in those cases, it feels natural for them to sort of it's kind of a strange workflow that the third party service that the agency signed up for is making pull requests towards their
I see.
internal repo, so to speak, without them having any insights into stuff like getting reports on it. They can get, alerts in Slack for it, stuff like that. And so they can administer this themselves. At least that's my hypothesis why they would want it. But it's also sort of transparency report thing, I think, because
Yeah.
this is what does our job for us. This is how much we are behind on this version for that and that reason. And there's logs in there. Why did it change? Why did it not update? Stuff like that. There's this sort of objective third party that is creating these reports on how the dependency management is going. I think instead of the consultancy agency, which is a very greedy type of business that always wants to make money, that just sends there's a bunch of updates you need to pay. So I think there's that aspect to it as well. It's sort of an objective third party that's illustrates that there are processes needed, there are indeed updates available, and so on.
That makes sense. Yeah, initially I was thinking they could log in and see a list to sort of show them, look, these things are happening. But the first thing you said about having a larger client or a more responsible client, I think that makes a lot more sense. A lot of sense. They can want to be able to go in and see this. So that's
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
I think that's the most common use case where sort of the main development is probably going on in internally or has been going on, and then a consultancy company comes in and, for example, helps them with transitioning to Drupal 8, or helps them transition to Drupal for that matter, and then they sort of work together from there. So quite often it will be that the team consists actually mainly of in-house people, but they have a consultancy company helping them.
Yeah, because I don't think you've actually really said that on this episode. But yeah, it works any PHP project. It's not just a Drupal tool. So in
Oh,
theory,
yeah.
as long as it's got a compose JSON file, it's going to work for anything. So it could be Symfony or Sculpin or Drupal or something, anything with a compose JSON file, I'd imagine.
For sure.
So not even just Drupal.
Definitely
Cool.
not. That's it's probably the biggest chunk of projects are Drupal projects, but I think definitely more than half are not.
Interesting. Yeah, it'd be interesting what the break. Do you have a breakdown of like how many different things are Drupal versus not Drupal or different versions? Maybe I'd say do you have that, but that's for the primary idea of it manages versions. So do you even have a breakdown of how many are on Drupal 8, Drupal 9, Drupal 10? Do you not collect that sort of metric?
Not at hand, but it's
Interesting
quite
to find out.
possible to find out.
Yeah, you could maybe have a graph of how many people are on Drupal 8 and then sort of over Drupal 9. Like I know Drupal.org has that sort of metric for having people with update module enabled, but
I
yeah,
think
I'd
at some
imagine.
point I did check what the most depended upon the package was, like across types of projects, and that was Composer patches, because
Okay.
that's being used in almost every Drupal project, of course, but also other. So I think that was the number one, interestingly enough, some time ago,
I think that's also like what we were saying earlier on about Twig and other things, that the fact that now we are in this sort of more off the island sort of ecosystem, that we can write packages. Composer packages was written by I don't say a Drupal person, but somebody like a Drupal developer anyway, or came from the Drupal community or a need for doing it in Drupal. So yeah, it's great that we can people can now write these sort of agnostic tools. And then they can get reused in Drupal, but also in other PHP projects as well. I think that's another real big win out of that transition.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's definitely an illustration of it.
Yeah. Ryan Tarama and I were talking about that a little while ago with about Drupal Commerce. We not sure if I've released that episode yet. A little bit of a backlog of episodes to edit and release, but yeah, it's really, really quite interesting. They did a lot of it with address library and other things early on with the commerce too.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, go back to this email that I found. So yeah, what's new on Violinist? This was May 2024, so a couple of months ago now, actually. So but yeah, a few months after we last spoke. So it's good to be able to sort of manage to sort of do this since then. But it says thrilled to announce that your account on Violinist has been upgraded to a team account. So the actual account that I had before has now been transitioned and has been updated. That's interesting, first of all. So it's not like I need to opt into this. It's there already, and it's been changed on. It's already there. I don't need to log in and do anything else. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, it was converted with a good old update hook.
That's really cool. So it's not like here's 10 steps that you need to go through and upgrade your account and opt into this. That's really interesting that that's happened.
Yeah, I did some research on this, and I took inspiration from DigitalOcean. Did the same thing actually at some point
Okay.
many, many years ago, actually. But the wording on it is almost identical. So I stole it from there. Hope they don't listen. And I found that was sort of such a nice way of saying it. It was a way of saying we're changing something, but you don't have to do anything. It's like you get something, you don't have to care about it if you don't want to. And so yeah, I really like that way of presenting it. And of course, if it should be presented that way, then it should also be implemented that way, obviously.
Probably makes it easier from a maintenance or code base perspective because then everybody has already been upgraded. You don't have half the people who've upgraded to the new account and half still on the old account. And you need to manage two different
Yeah.
flows or two different states of users. If you've upgraded everybody, so now everybody is essentially a team, then there's a lot more consistency, I would imagine, than having two split sets of people.
You can say that, and it's true, of course, but the development workflow of the Teams feature was actually, I think I referred to it as a parallel development or something like that earlier when I said it. But the team functionality has been enabled on the Violinist for more than a year before it
Oh,
was
wow.
launched. But since there are so many data changes, data model changes, that none of them happened, and all of the interface changes was automatically disabled because of it. But with setting PHP flag, I could enable them on different environments and develop the features one by one. And not to mention all of the data migration one by one. So in theory, what you said is of course true, but actually, if it did happen as they were not upgraded or they were upgraded, then all of the functionality for both single users and team users were in the code base at that point. So
Wow, it's been that
technically,
long.
yeah.
So we spoke in January, so you'd that obviously been there a while already before we even spoke the first time.
Oh yeah, for
It's
sure.
been there for that long. That's
Yeah,
really interesting.
it's been sort of in the backlog for quite a long time since it's been requested so early. So it's been worked on in sort of sprints and yeah, released when ready enough at least. So but the module called Violinist Teams, as it's called, has been enabled for I think more than 1.5 year.
You've essentially, I was trying to put words in your mouth, but so you've essentially got a feature flag where you've got enabled team support, essentially. So I think you said you're doing it in settings.php.
Yeah.
So then you've got places in the code that's like, if the setting is enabled, do this, otherwise, do that, or don't do anything. And that's all done based on that feature flag or that feature toggle.
That's exactly correct.
That's cool. Big fan of
It's
feature flag then.
yes, me too. And this was very useful to ship this feature. But there's one area that was very, very challenging, I must admit. And that's all of the integration tests that are on Violinist, because there's BHAT tests on Violinist for a bunch of things, quite a lot of things. And since the interface changes, there's been for quite a while, all of the tests have been running for with the feature flag enabled and without the feature
Okay.
flag enabled. So,
So
for
you've got two sets of
example,
tests running.
Well, that's the point. They're the same set of tests, so it should work the same way if teams are enabled or not. And that's yeah, that's been I should say I did some cut some corners, or what should I say, did some compromises in the verbosity of those tests,
Brilliant
put
way to
it
put
in
it.
that way. Yeah. So that was the most challenging part, I would say. Because especially in BHAT, you don't have that type of inline logic where you can say, is feature flag enabled, and don't do the rest of the rest of the test, or these three lines. And so when the interface changes, you have sort of have to make up this this logic as part of the steps. So yeah,
By interface, you mean like the user interface, as in like
yes yes
not like yeah. So yeah, when you
so
like
for
latching on things
example
changing.
so for example it's like if this button is worded like that over here, then maybe changed with the team's stuff because you have to select the team first or something like that. Yeah, that was interesting, but now that parallel tests and all of that has been converted into legacy. So yeah, but
Wow.
it was a very interesting technical challenge. Some of the tests especially, because feature flags and sort of avoiding running migrations and avoiding changing the interface with the feature flag. All of those things are very easy and very flexible and very useful and all of those things. But making sure that the things worked like they should with the feature flag disabled and with the feature flag enabled, that was yeah. So there's a couple of tests, for example, that are tagged with teams. For example, can I invite a new user to the team? Does that work? That's a test that would not pass with the feature flag disabled, obviously. So I have some entire tests that are disabled under the feature flag disabled part, and then literally all of the tests that were run with the feature flag disabled should work exactly like that with the feature flag enabled. So that was the part that was challenging.
Interesting. Yeah, it's like, what's the alternative? So yeah, the other thing would be you'd have had a, if you've got like a main branch with like the code without the teams, you've then got another branch that has team support on it that's constantly then becoming out of date and behind, and you're having to merge and rebase and everything. And like eventually it's like, yes, this is done. We'll now merge it. And it's like that, from what you said, if it's been on production for like over a year, like that branch, you'd have had an over a year old branch sat in GitHub or GitLab or wherever, with like
Yeah.
with a Teams branch that you're constantly having to update, and you could try to avoid it sort of diverging too much away from the mainline branch. So yeah, big having it live already and already integrated is a much better way of doing it, I think, in my opinion, using feature flags and hidden and yeah, much, much better. We had to do a release of something. We to put a new navigation menu live on a project, but we had to do it late in the evening because it would have broken the site for a little while because people had to move links around and everything at the same time. Couldn't really automate that part. But for us, the menu was already there. We just had to turn the feature toggle on already. So for us, we didn't have to deploy any code, we didn't have to do any merges, we didn't have to do any deployments. Like, the deployment had already happened, the feature was being released by just changing a flag in the UI. So
Yes.
be using it's called, I think it's called, actually called feature toggle module. So it's just a UI with checkboxes. So you create a new toggle, gives a label and a machine name. And then there's a service that you can use to get the feature status. We use that to say, if this is enabled, do this. Otherwise, yeah, we can do that sort of logic. And I've wrote a Twig helper then, so I can literally do if feature is enabled, blah blah blah. So we can some of the new system things we've been doing. We're doing design refresh, so updating what certain cards look like, for example, on the front end. So now we've got if feature is enabled, we've got the block of new markup, else the block of old markup. So we can switch between the new and the old one by switching this flag on in UI. So currently we've got, and I imagine this is still sort of the same street view. We've got if Teams is enabled, do this. If not, do that. So we've got this half code or this block of code even that's not being run anymore. So at some point we're going to go and do a big cleanup and go and delete that old that feature's live now. We don't need the feature flag anymore. So there'll be a big if you've got a big pull request, have you done the big pull request yet? There's like delete all the feature flags for Teams yet or not.
Well, not all of them, no, but the release was there's a helper for is Teams enabled, and the release was to change the code in there to pull the value from settings PHP to return true instead. So basically it
I've
always
done that as
returns
well.
true.
I've done that. If false, do this, like a poor man's feature flag, just to get something working locally.
I
Big
guess
fan of this.
that part and all of the invocations of it is gone, but there's still some old templates that is not in use anymore for sure.
Yes, we'll eventually have a commit that's like delete the feature flag and then delete the half of the code that we're not using anymore. So we'll just leave the new code there. And we've had these things live for a little while, so we're not going to roll them back now at this point. So that's the other nice thing with the feature flag is if we need to roll it back, we can just turn the flag off again. So we
Yes.
don't need to do a big revert and everything. It's brilliant. But yeah, definitely a nice way of working. So interesting. Not too dissimilar, I guess, with coming back to the Drupal 7 and Drupal 8 stuff again. Things like Drupal set message is always the one that I sort of come back to, like global Drupal set message function that you'd use to display a message on a page. That was there from Drupal 7 and Drupal 8. And then from getting my version numbers correct, it went from 8. In Drupal 8, they introduced the messenger service, which was the sort of new way of doing Drupal set message or setting messages. And then Drupal set message was deprecated. Drupal set message used the messenger service internally, so we didn't have this duplication of code. And then when Drupal 9 came out, they removed Drupal set message. So not too dissimilar to what you were just saying, but my old thing had the feature toggle, and then now it just returned true. So it's a good way of maintaining this sort of backward compatibility approach for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And at least theoretically, you could
Theoretically.
add back the Drupal set message by putting it in custom code and invoking the service yourself. So by just looking at the old version, that would be theoretically possible, although a bad idea.
But actually, I was looking again at retrofit, which is the thing Matt Gladman and I were talking about. I think that adds like a compatibility layer in. Maybe I'm going off on a completely correct tangent, but that's that would be interesting. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do it. I had some old if you've ever used Tailwind CSS, but in the sort of pre-1.0 version, they had some classes they then removed in 1.0. But they've got a whole plugin ecosystem anyway. So I wrote some custom plugins to re-add some things they removed that I was already using. So rather than fix all my projects, I was already using them in prod. So depends how you want to do it, I suppose. Both ways work.
Yeah, as long as they don't linger around forever and become your crutch and legacy code.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's making that decision and like, do we want to do this, knowing that it's maybe not the ideal solution, or what did you say, the test isn't verbose as it could be. Like knowing when to sort of make that decision or take on that sort of technical debt, for a better term. Like I think that's something that comes with experience. But knowing when to do that and like what's the right solution, not like what's the ideal. So that the ideal solution looks like this, and this. But I've only got 2 days to do it. So I'm going to do this now not cut this corner, but I'm going to make this implementation now, maybe hard code this, and then work towards the ideal solution later on as things like time and budget and priorities allow. It's sometimes you've got to ship the thing, and yeah, then revisit thing. If it's 90% right, then it's good enough. Ship it, and then we'll you know, if there are bugs, we will fix them later, or we'll unhard code that thing, or we'll unhard code that feature flag later on.
Yeah, for sure. And just making sure to record in the right place where you remember to fix them. In the last part of shipping Teams, it was a couple of features I knew were missing, and that's sort of evaluation if is this really a blocker? I mean,
Exactly. Yeah.
will people notice? How many people are using this in that way? And then because yeah, it's going to have more net positive effect of releasing it than waiting for that very little used feature to be implemented. So there's a milestone on Violinist called the first after Teams.
Brilliant.
So
Yeah.
it's the first things that should be implemented after it was released. A couple of them are test fixes, for example. Didn't have time to write the test for that part, so instead I just implemented them. And some are less frequently used stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I think that sometimes it's knowing, yeah, again, when to make that decision, I suppose, and when to do this or over that, and when to go back and clean up something, or when, you know, again, when is it fully featured enough to ship? Like, if you've got 10 things I want to do, do I have to do all 10 to release something? Like, what's the minimum viable product? What can I ship? Like, when is Teams good enough to release to everybody? And then we'll add features XYZ, you know, once in that first after Teams release, or second after Teams release, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, so that was a tough decision, some of them, but yeah, mostly happy with being able to ship after sure. That many years since the first feature request.
Is Teams feature complete now? Have you got more things that you want to, are you still iterating on it and adding more things?
Well, there's a couple of things, yes, that I want to add, and I was going to see if I could pull up the list here, but well, it's mostly around sort of usability standpoint, I would say, is it, how do you actually go about changing this for an entire team versus, for example, just for the project? So it's like a hierarchy, you know, that some settings are applied to all of the projects inside of a team, and some are applied on the project if you override the team setting and stuff like that. And some of these things are probably not very obvious. How they work and how you change them and if they link to each other, for example. So it's mostly in that category, I would say. I don't think there's any like big features that are missing out.
What
Well,
are you going to be doing
open
now
for suggestion.
after Teams? Yeah, so have you got anything planned for after Teams? What's the next big thing?
Well, I do have a plan, but I'm not completely sure how it's going to look yet. But since you are asking, this is the podcast where I'm announcing it, obviously. I was planning to make it possible and easy to self-host the Violinist is my plan, with
Ooh, interesting.
the different aspects to it. Self-hosting could, of course, mean that you could run something that communicates with the Violinist service to be able to do its job. But my plan, I'm still sort of researching if this is any point, if you will. But my plan was to make it possible to run a Docker container that does all of the things that Linux does, because that runs Docker containers, and to have a restriction that you need to have a license to run it. Because running a self-hosted version would require a license. So I'm looking into sort of the options there and the pricing there. And there's a couple of interesting aspects to it as well, because I've actually had some people reach out to me, could you install Violinist on our infrastructure or inside our internal network or stuff like that? Or could you communicate with our GitLab server that's behind the VPN? And currently, that's not possible beyond reserving a static IP address, which usually is not an option. But if you were able to self-host it, then you could actually run it as either a GitHub Actions runner directly on the repo. You could set the cron interval for it there if you wanted to do that. So run it once a day, once a week, once a month, whatever. Or even on GitLab or in Bitbucket. And there would be no communication to Violinist, obviously, needed. And you could, as a consequence, since it's running on the GitLab infrastructure, then circumvent this problem I was describing, that you need a VPN to access the internal GitLab instance, because, well, you're already inside of there. So there's like a range of possibilities there for enterprises that have sort of limitations on what third-party software they are able to use, because their IT departments have rules and so on. So that's an interesting area to do some research, and not to mention the actual pricing of it and stuff like that. And interestingly enough, this is already live on Violinist. It's using all projects on Violinist are using license keys now generated by Violinist.
Great.
So it's sort of ready to be implemented. I'm just sort of looking into the different models to it. But there's also, of course, a bunch of interfaces that needs to be created, like purchasing a license and viewing your license, and sort of I'm not even sure how to sort of limit the license. For example, if you purchase a license to run it for self-hosted projects, what are the limitations? They could be, for example, do you purchase them per repo? Do you purchase them per organization? Do they last for a week, so you need to go in and purchase another one? Do they last for a year? So there's a bunch of things to look into. But I think it well, I know of some potential organizations that could have use for this, and it's
Yeah,
also
I could
an
probably think of
area
something.
where it's a better alternative than some of the other update services that are owned by GitHub, for example, which you cannot run. Well, you can't run it on Bitbucket at all, of course, but you can't self-host it in the same way. So there's an area of opportunity, I think.
It's an interesting thing that, yeah, because currently it's more of a SaaS-based tool, isn't it? I guess that's probably how you categorize it. So to try and then do self-hosting, there's a thing I think we may have talked about it briefly at the last episode. There's a thing I was thinking of doing, or just haven't found the time to get into doing, but wanted to do more of a SaaS-based approach. Because there was something or is something similar. I don't think it maybe isn't updated anymore, but it was something simple. You had to download their app. It wasn't familiar for Drupal developers, and it was using, you had to install this database driver and install this, and it was using, I don't know, obviously MongoDB or something that was, I'm like, I have no idea how to do this. Whereas, yeah, if you can at least package, which is why I was thinking more down the SaaS option, but for self-hosting, if you could do it in a way that it's like, here's a Docker container or a Nix Flake or something that's got all the dependencies built into it that people could sort of quote, just use, then yeah, or use easily, and that'd be good. But yeah, it does open up more things like how do you maintain it over time and how does that work, as well as having to build, checkout pages and things for your on your side. But
Yeah, and
interesting.
there's the interesting aspect of support, for example. Why doesn't it work on my computer? Suddenly becomes a thing,
I will fly to your
where
office and I will have a look at it for you. Yeah. That's
yeah,
the
it's
top
just of
level.
course easier with Docker containers because they should be the same. But anyway, so the goal would then be that you type Docker run and then add in some flags. This is the repository. This is the token I want to use. This is the license key that I have purchased. And then everything would work exactly like it does, as if you added the project on Violinist. Except, of course, you don't get the interface on Violinist. You don't get the interface for logs and notifications on different kinds of things. Those are sort of the SaaS features. But if the requirement is to be able to self-host it, for example, then that's got you
Yeah,
covered.
that's really interesting. Yeah, I can see there's that sort of bit, also the technical side of it, but also yeah, what would you offer on a self-hosted version versus the SaaS version? How would you price it? What support does it come with? Yeah, all those sort of more business sort of decisions would be really, yeah, it opens up for you. I say this, yeah, semi-serious. Like, how do you find the time to do all this of our stuff on violinist versus and do the day job as well? I think something I struggle with actually, but it sounds like you've already got, yeah, lots of ideas. Like, yeah, maybe we could just another episode about how you find the time to do all this stuff.
I guess my answer to that is I am good at making it sound like it's advanced. I'm a
I think
consultant after all.
that
If you say something that sounds advanced, then you can take a higher price. So that's a very important trait as a consultant.
Yeah, but you say that, but you are shipping like big features like Teams and self-hosting. Yeah, there's some substance behind that. That's not just smoke and mirrors, for want of a better term. So yeah, you are actually
I guess.
reasonable
Well,
stuff.
it's experience, I guess. And also, I am very good at programming on my cell phone, which makes it efficient to sort of do while sitting on the toilet or on the tram or I want to say in the shower, but I don't bring my cell phone in the shower. Oh.
No, that'd be dangerous, probably, I'd imagine. I do remember going, we were driving to a client meeting or something once, and a server fell over, and he wasn't driving, somebody else was driving, and then the two of us were sat there. And yeah, he was SSHing from his phone onto a server to run some reboot command or something. And it's like, what? How? Like, what? This was a few years ago as well. Yeah, I haven't really tried probably run NeoVim on a phone, or I could set up some sort of home lab and connect into it. I don't know, that would be really interesting, really interesting. But no,
Well,
it's
I have a setup for that I really, really like. I run TailScale on my computer and I always have it on. So then I can just SSH into it from my phone because I have TailScale on that one. And then I can run Vim and I have all my ZSH and all of the shell and all of the. Well, I have my computer on my phone, basically. So yeah, that. I actually yesterday I required a new module and run Drushup DB and pushed a new pull request all from my phone. So that's possible.
something I've seen. It's put on my don't do list. But I've seen Matthew Krogan, who's very involved in the Nix stuff. He's got a Nix phone, and he's got like a little setup with he's running like Nix, I don't know exactly, Nix OS on his phone. But he's got a little sort of small keyboard and a screen, and it looks really cool. And I'm like, oh, I don't have time to look into that. And
Yeah.
maybe that's how I try and imagine. I'm not to be distracted by the shiny thing and going, I'm not going to rebuild my site again or something. I think it's sort of having that sort of focus and knowing that these are the things I'm going to do and not going to do. At least that's how I would try and do it. But
Yeah.
the flip side, like I was looking at your Drupal.org page again, like we've got all these contributions, all these projects on there. I just found a list somewhere of 39 issues on Violinist. I don't know if they're all the ones that you're working on, but yeah, you're doing a lot of stuff. It's
Well,
inspirational.
there's a chunk of the website that is open source on Drupal.org, so that reflects my profile, of course. But it's also, yeah, open source. Violinist Teams is a module on Drupal.org that is open source.
I'll have to look at that in the meantime. And I'll have to do some digging. But yeah, I've definitely got an itch to do some SaaS-based stuff myself. And yeah, just be inspired again. As I was also the first time we spoke, but I just haven't had the time to put into it. Maybe when I finish these client projects, I'll have to try and leash out some time to sort of do
Yeah,
something. But I
to
think,
that,
yeah.
I happy to share some experiences yeah, what's good and bad. Personally, I think there's I think I said this last time, but I think Drupal is so underrated for doing SaaS-based stuff, especially if it's like a user-based subscription. Now that I ship Teams, that's different things, but like a user and you purchase a role, basically, it's just so perfect for doing SaaS. I don't know why more people are doing it. And the other thing, the biggest takeaway from running the service is how much value it has to provide excellent support. It's just yeah, it just pays off so much, really. And when people start in new organizations, they want to take their tools with them when they are provided with the excellent support. So it just it's a great organic growth strategy, I would say.
Yeah, because you're also a blogger. So you look at your website and you've also started blogging again in the last couple of months and writing about technical debt and legacy code. And yeah,
Yeah.
how you found the time. It's scary. But yeah, I'll have to, yeah, I'm going to have a go away and look at this again. I'm going to read these last couple of articles, the recent ones that you've posted about legacy code. I'm going to check out Violinist Teams, see what's going on there. Maybe I can do some contribution, see what
Cool.
I can do. But yeah, it's been really interesting to speak to you again. And it's been great to hear about some of the things that you've been doing and hear about what you're going to be doing next. And yeah, and continue to be using Violinist and looking in seeing how it continues to evolve. Because I didn't, well, maybe didn't say last time, or maybe I didn't realize. But reading one of your blog posts, it says that wait a minute, where's it gone? I think it said it was a 2023 blog post, and it already said it had been Violinist was 7 years old at that point. So it's not something that you've been maintaining even for a short period of time. This has been going for quite a while.
That's correct. Yeah.
Wow. I'm sure there's more we could keep digging, more we could uncover. So yeah, feels like there's a lot. But yeah, I think
Sure. Happy to come on
really.
there and very grateful that you want to hear my ramblings in this category. So.
Always great to speak to some other people, and yeah, I learn a lot from speaking to everybody I've had on the podcast so far, and yeah, especially when it's things like feature flagging and continuous integration and continuous deployment, like things that I'm already doing. It's nice to hear other people's opinions on them and sort of validates the way I'm trying to do things and work, and to hear other people's experience. And it's always been great to speak to people I've speaking to at DrupalCon and other conferences. But if I haven't, I've met people on here that I haven't spoken to before. So yeah, it's really good to thank you for taking the time again to come on and speak to me. Again, I've learned a lot. I'm feeling super inspired again to go away and do some things myself. And I'm continuing to I will continue to look on and see what's going on in violinist land.
Thanks.
If people want to find out more about you or about a violinist, where should they go?
They could go to violinist.io is the website that we are referencing. I have a Drupal.org profile. My profile is Eric SM in one word. And then I have a Twitter account, I guess, at ORKJ. So yeah, those are some places.
How much is Violinist? People want to try it.
How much it costs?
How much does it cost?
Well, there's a free trial, so zero. I think the lowest tier is $10. That gives you five projects monitored around the clock, all the time, all the days in the year.
So, yeah,
That's private projects, by the way. All open source projects are monitored for free. So
that's a
five
good offering.
projects for 10, or the free plan also has one private project included.
People can go to violinist.io, register free, and get automated updates on their project probably within a few minutes. At least from that was my experience when I did it a while ago. So
Definitely.
definitely recommended. Brilliant. Yeah, so I'm sure we could probably speak for another hour quite easily.
We
But
could,
yeah, that.
except my battery is actually running out, so that would sort of be the limit there. So,
Yes, this is true. Yes, technological limitations
yes.
that way. So yeah, it's been great to have you on again. Potentially we'll speak. I'm gonna I'll if something else I get from Violinist, this is new, I will say yeah, maybe we should talk about that as well. If you'd be interested
Yeah.
coming on again, potentially for the first third time, potentially.
Okay. I
Yeah,
have
so
some notifications here about critical level. So I will just
cool.
say
We will wrap this up then.
thank you
Thank you
for
very
having
much.
me, and
Thanks for
I'll
coming
speak with you
again.
soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks everyone for listening to the Beyond Blocks podcast. I'm Oliver Davis. Goodbye.